Welcome to the Space Show, Chris.
Thank you, Andrew.
Before the age of satellites, how did mariners and others find their way around the Earth?
Well, a combination of science, art and mythology, I guess. What most people, I guess, would visualize a navigator doing, say in the 19th century and early 20th century, is to make observations to stars. So they were the first people that were using extraterrestrial observations for practical, down-to-earth purposes rather than for studying the concept of, you know, where are we and where does the universe come from and other such philosophical questions. Navigation has always relied not only on the sort of external mathematical information, but of course a knowledge of local conditions, currents, seamanship, the ability of being able to dead reckon across featureless oceans. These are all parts of the skills of the navigator.
And this didn't change very much when aircraft came along, did it?
No, it didn't. I mean, the early aviation industry always was still basically flying by the seats of its pants. It had a navigator. In fact, until quite recently, commercial aircraft had a navigator on board. But it's one of those professions that is finding itself having to be retrained because the navigator is one of those people that is now missing on the flight decks of modern aircraft.
And the reason for that is satellites.
The reason for that is satellites and a number of other technologies, but primarily satellites. The realization that satellites could help in navigation occurred almost from day one of space age, when the Americans were listening in to the transmissions, the monotonous tonal transmissions from Sputnik. They were able to see, in practice, the application of the Doppler effect, the effect that your listeners would be very familiar with is, for example, when a train or a car moves towards you, the frequency seems to change, and then as it goes away from you, the frequency again changes. So the Doppler effect was recognized in the satellite transmissions, and the people at the Applied Physics Laboratory at JPL in the US sat down, literally from day one, and designed the basis of the transit navigation system, which came into operation in 1964, barely just a few years after the launch of Sputnik.
That originally was just for the Navy, wasn't it?
Yes, it was known as the Navy Navigation System, but within 3 years, by 1967, it was released to the civilian market, and that was the first exposure, I guess, to the civilian audience, the navigators, to satellite technology. I think we've talked about it in an earlier program about there always was the geodesy part, which was a group of boffins in a number of laboratories around the world that were using satellite technologies in a very precise and a very sophisticated manner. But with the launching of transit onto the civilian scene and the ability of using sat-nav, satellite navigation, suddenly thousands, tens of thousands of users realized that here was one very beneficial use of satellites. The other big beneficial use, of course, was in communications and in meteorological sensing.
Well, how accurate was the transit system?
Well, depended on how you processed it. There is a continuum in all these tracking systems, and we'll talk later about the situation today. At the crudest level, let's just talk about a ship, making observations over a few minutes for which the transit satellites were visible, then they were able to determine their position very quickly to a couple of hundred meters accuracy. On land, where you were not moving and you had the luxury of being able to occupy a station for several days and you had special built receivers for surveyors, they were able to collect the data over several days and then post-processed at their leisure. Then they were able to get meter-level accuracy and then finally down to below the meter accuracy when they employed a number of receivers in the field and were able to determine the relative position of one receiver to the other. So the same system that gave you several hundred meters accuracy at sea at a touch of a button was able to give you better than 1 meter accuracy relative positioning on land to the surveyors and geodesists. This tradition of being able to wring out higher and higher accuracies on land by surveyors and geodesists has continued to this very day.
That's really accurate enough to tell whether your receiver's on one side of a desk or another.
Yes, that's right.
The Americans then went on to develop a much more sophisticated system called Navstar.
That's right. I mean, by 1967, transit was made available to the civilian community. By the early 70s, they were already conducting experiments to replace transit. What was the next generation of satellite system going to be based on? And experiments were carried out by the Air Force, the US Air Force, and the US Navy, and they were finally brought together in the mid-70s into a joint program office. And the system that came to be called the Global Positioning System, or GPS in short, evolved from those early experiments. And they were based on a rather bold concept of putting clocks in the satellites, precise clocks in the satellites, and being able to measure a distance directly, not like as we understand a distance in surveying, which is, for example, using a laser where you fire a pulse to a glass reflector and then measure the time that the pulse takes to travel both ways. That's a two-way range. But the GPS system was based on the idea of being able to send a signal from the satellite, and on that signal would have a time generated by the satellite clock, and as that signal traveled down to the ground station, the receiver, which itself was also installed with a clock, the difference in the times, the time of transmission as carried by the signal and the time of reception as measured at the receiver, would give you a measure of a distance to the satellite. And from this distance, and in addition, what was transmitted was the position of the satellite. So if you were able to track a number of satellites at the same time, you had the positions of the satellites, like they were control stations or trig stations in space, and you had the distances. So you were able to actually determine your position from this, if you like, intersection of distances. What this required, unlike transit, which where you were able to determine position from a single satellite, you had to have four satellites visible simultaneously anywhere in the Earth. So the GPS system is a much more ambitious system than the earlier transit system was.
And that, of course, necessitated them placing these satellites into a higher orbit so you could get four in view at one time, didn't it?
That's right. In order to minimize the number of satellites that you had to use, they had to be placed at 20,000 kilometers altitude, approximately 4 Earth radii away.
And the fourth satellite, we actually, is my understanding of it, is that the three satellites are actually needed for the actual distances, and the fourth one gives you the time, because you can get away, can't you, without having a very accurate clock in the receiver.
That's right. This is another innovation about GPS, is that the synchronization of the clocks on the ground and the satellite, in order to measure a distance, of course you had to have them running at the same time, but you cannot hope to have a receiver that will synchronize with the satellite clock system, or a receiver that had a clock as precise as those that are carried on satellites. So in order to be able to simplify the user equipment, remember, one of the criteria was to develop a low-cost system. The system was highly portable, low-cost, for military purposes. You had to develop built into it a way in which you could synchronize the clocks. And by having a fourth satellite, then essentially this allows you to synchronize the clock.
Well, thank you for joining us tonight on The Space Show, Chris.
Thank you, Andrew.